In today's episode of the Critic Corner, Russell and I talk about The Dark Knight Trilogy by Christopher Nolan. But yeah, man, so that leaves what is the Dark Knight Trilogy? And as those that know me know, this is a very sensitive topic for me. But one thing you kind of touched on at the very beginning, I don't want to dwell too much on it. Trigger warnings, yeah. It's like, don't tread on the Batman. So just let's leave it at that. But when it comes to all this, I do have some things to say about The Dark Knight Rises itself, but the concepts of the films. I love that he grew the hero because he wasn't a hero. The thing is, I think he set the realism bar so high that there was no way the DCEU could ever duplicate it, which is why the DCEU needed to reestablish itself to be what it could be. And Warner Brothers, I think, was confused because they tried to take the formula to Man of Steel.
Yeah, it's almost a hindrance to like the DCEU because of how singular the Dark Knight Trilogy was, that it's just like, damn, so what do we do now? Like, we can't replicate this. And I guess we can do the opposite, but they didn't do that well at all. Like, and it's what fans might have been expecting.
They tried to adjust on the fly. You can't do that once the ship has already set sail. That's the problem. Or like, we launched a rocket into space. You're not going to try to change the trajectory at that point. Because they should have known, like, oh yeah, we got Nolan as the producer. That was the selling point for Man of Steel. It's like, no, Zack Snyder is Zack Snyder. Let him
do his thing. That's a marketing line.
Yeah, but I did not go watch Man of Steel because of Nolan. I didn't want to see a Nolan Superman. I wanted to see a Superman movie that hopefully was original and that paid an homage. At first, I didn't catch the homage. But it doesn't feel like a Superman movie because he's not Superman. Kind of like the whole Batman sequence, he's not a Superman yet, which he becomes technically supposed to become in Justice League. So we're going to see it in the Snyder Cut. Woohoo! But before that, the thing is, I did a whole separate thing for how the DCEU has aged. I think it's aged considerably better. Zack Snyder did have a vision that Warner Brothers removed, because here's where I get to the problem. They try to make it realistic on the fly. So it's like, oh, you know what? Suicide Squad, Jared Leto's Joker, forgettable. Let's do Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. I thought that was a joke. I literally thought it was a joke. So then when I saw a behind-the-scenes picture of Joaquin Phoenix dressed as a clown, I'm like, this is obviously Photoshopped. I'm like, this is for real? Warner Brothers, WTH, what are you doing? And then now, of course, everything's history, but that just set up the confusion that they dug themselves into. They have the Arrowverse on right. CW. They consolidated their shows. Then they did DC Universe, which they're consolidating to HBO Max. And then Titan, Swamp Thing, Doom Patrol. They canceled Swamp Thing, which was pretty good. The Doom Patrol will come back for a second season, even though it was unceremoniously canceled, which I thought it was a great high-concept show, better than The Umbrella Academy, but under the shadow of The Umbrella Academy because it was on its own channel. And Titans was actually really good for someone that actually hated F Batman's like, oh, screw you, Dick Grayson. You know, it's like, I was upset. But, like, okay, what the flip are you guys doing? Because then what do? When they do the Flashpoint in the CW, they make those characters come to the DC Universe characters. And I was like, what the hell are you guys getting?
Yeah, they mean, right?
What are you guys doing? They don't know what you're doing. And now, like, the Joker is actually, because it made so much money, it's like going to set up a whole new dark universe. No.
Joker sequel. Joker universe.
This, man. So,
I don't know. Dude, you know what? This is my take. I feel like you said, you know what? The DC screwed up. They tried to make their own universe, tried to do the whole Marvel thing, but they didn't have the groundwork for it. Like, now Marvel has to follow this sort of fixed path. DC, you know what? They have great characters. They have great villains. What if they just make random movies? Let's make a random Joker movie. Let's make a random Batman movie. Let's make it cool. Like, let's build our own universe within it, and then we'll make another Batman movie. Like, because people will still want to see Batman, and they'll still want to see the new suit. And, like, maybe that's just the direction they need to go. I think they made a mistake trying to catch up with Marvel and with the whole extended universe, because, yeah, obviously you want to see characters come together, and that's awesome. But you can also make, you know, standalone Justice League films, you know, like, yeah. Or a four-part Justice League movie, that's a series right there, like, make a Justice League series, like, I don't know, there, I think maybe DC has to, like, consider, I think they already are, to be honest, doing, kind of shifting away from the whole connected universe, like.
They have to.
I don't know, and if anything, they can connect them all with Flash at the end.
In a multiverse, like, sequence.
If they really need to put them all together. Yeah. Right at the end, yeah, right at the end.
They did do that. Ezra Miller, the Flash in Justice League, made a cameo on
Shows
the
up
Flash
at the CW,
TV show,
yeah.
Which I actually thought was pretty cool. I'm like, okay, so now you really confused us. Because it's like the movies, the TV shows, the DC Universe, CW, oh, whatever, man. The last thing you guys needed was like was the multiverse with animation so they could go to the Young Justice. So then like that would have been really thrown everything for them. But in all that, that's to say, that is that's the staying power of what Nolan did with The Dark Knight. Everyone had to up their game because of what he set with Batman Begins.
Yeah, exactly.
And then what he ended up doing with The Dark Knight. Now, I asked myself, would the movie still be remembered and would it have been as enormous as it was had Heath Ledger not died? I don't really know. But what I can say is this. That performance would have defined his career no matter what. Because I watched that movie and I'm still looking for Heath Ledger. I don't see Heath Ledger. It never comes across me. Whenever I see Bruce Wayne, I'm like, oh, that's Christian Bale playing Bruce Wayne. Oh, that's Michael Caine playing Alfred. I never, ever see Heath Ledger playing
Joker. That's Joker.
It's a once-in-a-generation type of performance, you know? I can't stress that enough. There is no Heath Ledger. That's the freaking Joker. And that's what made it terrifying, because I believed he was real. He sent shivers down my spine multiple times. I'm like, ooh, like literally when he did the recordings, like when he's like, are you the real Batman? And then when he's torturing him,
No, he's like, no, the way he's dressed, I can, you know. Like,
yeah, when he starts, and then the camera cuts off, I kid you not, shivers down my spine.
Right.
In the theater, like, I was terrified. I'm like, what the heck did I just experience? And it happens every single time. And that's the thing. That's what makes it so special. That till this day, 12 years after the fact, I'm still looking for Heath Ledger. It's like, I don't see him. He's gone. It's like, dude, that's not your voice.
Yeah.
Not once does his real voice ever come out.
The way he just that's the ultimate goal for an actor, just to get lost, have the audience get lost in that character. And that happened to me too. Like, I recently saw a movie and it's just like, wow, this is like timeless. Like, nothing about this has aged, because you know what you're seeing is just raw emotion. It's just raw, like, talent and professionalism, and bro, just an artist literally doing his best, being at his best. And I'm so grateful that we even got to see something like that.
Yeah, and
our medium, you know, like comic books, and I don't know if the movie would have done better if he had died or not. Like, I feel maybe I would have done the same. But he might not have won an Oscar, which is kind of like fucked up to say. But just knowing the Academy and how they don't really like respect comic book movies, like, if the tragedy of him passing away would not have happened, I think he would have gotten nominated for sure. And deserved to win, obviously. But would it have happened based on how Hollywood works and all that shit? Like, I don't know. But you know, I it's hard to think about that. I try not to think about it. I'm just... Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we got to see it and that he did get what the recognition that he deserved, and, you know, lifelong's work to give. And that's honestly the dream for any artist to inspire even after you're gone, you know?
Yeah. Cause I watch, you know how I love history too. So The Patriot's one of my favorite movies. And I'm like, oh, that's Heath Ledger. And so I say, oh, there he is. And I tell, oh, yeah, that's Heath Ledger. never comes across the Dark Knight.
I love Knight's Tale. The Patriot, I was like, he's so good in that one, too. I was like,
oh, wow. He's really good.
I love Knight's Tale. David Bowie. David Bowie comes out and, like, they do a David Bowie song, like, when he's dancing with a girl in the dinner or whatever. Hmm. And I don't know. I just love medieval. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, you know. So I was
Yeah. So
great actor, great actor, you know, like.
Yeah, so, and I'm actually glad he got to see a snippet of it. Because remember, the IMAX showed the opening scene. So he technically did get to experience it because that was in December with
Iron Legend. Yeah, exactly.
So the following month is a tragedy. So that's at least
he maybe the best opening scene ever, right? In a film, like, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
The opening bank heist scene, like, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know. Did we watch I Am Legend together? We might have, because back then we were like watching everything together.
I think we did, yeah. I remember. I think I geeked out because there was that like Batman v Superman like poster in like Times Square or whatever when Will Smith was writing. I was like, oh my god, it's happening, you know. And then the actual movie happened.
Yeah, for sure. But it was I know when I watched the bank heist because the opening scene, so that's where they put for I Am Legend. I'm like, man, I missed that movie Heat with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and even William Fichtner, who is in the bank scene for the Dark Knight, is in the movie Heat. So I'm like, this reminds me of Heat, and I found out that Heat was one of the ones that inspired this. But I gotta hand it, I think the best heist scene I've seen him, especially in modern times, has to be the one from Heat. It's just, it sends shivers on my spine every single time. And it, because LA, just more connection there. Mm-hmm. And because everything where it's filmed, like, hey, I remember that before they changed that, or before Torre Central came around, you know, it's like all that stuff.
Yeah, you're super, exactly.
That's
I might have to rewatch Heat and then compare the two. But yeah, I mean, I know Heat was like amazing, for sure. Dude. I just love the end of the scene, you know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stranger. And that reveal, and you know, the pool of the strain, and just the gas comes out of the little smoke grenade or whatever.
That's all that was missing.
And you in my hand, I'm just like, oh, bro, his face is just gonna turn super like creepy and smiley, but you know, they don't show it. But in my head, that's what happened, and I'm just like,
right?
Wow. I'm like, wow, amazing.
even though this dude was behind a lot of that makeup, the moment that always gets me is the final scene that they're sharing together when Joker is telling Batman, we really should stop all this fighting or else we're going to miss the fireworks. And it was like great editing, great sound mixing, timing, and music, because the moment when the people on the ferries do not decide to blow themselves up, the camera hits Joker's face and his disappointment shines. Like, the only human moment he shows in the entire film was outstanding. I'm like, you can read it through all that makeup. You can read the disappointment space. Like, you're supposed to go boom. You know, it's like, this is not what's supposed to happen. It's like, it's a
fun moment. Yeah, that whole here we go moment, that anticipation, knowing that he thinks that he's right, you know, and then being like, what the fuck? You know, and then also just real quick, like, I love how the movie is like, not, obviously, it's serious as his moments, but I love how, you know, in the first two times that Joker asks someone, how do you want to know how he got these scars, and he goes into a big monologue, and it's cringy and it's scary, but like Batman's just like, no, but I know he got these, you know, and it's just like such a great campy little Batman moment, like in the middle of all that, like, greatness, like, I don't know, just little scene that I appreciated.
Yeah, and it's that
little small moment of it, yeah.
Where only those that that are into the lore of Batman catch that moment. Why Joker's laughing on the way down. That moment right there is for anyone that's read the, ever since 1986, anything that's Batman Joker related. The Dark Knight Returns book. Joker having his neck snapped by the aged Batman in the Tunnel of Love of all places, and realizing that, oh, you're in trouble now because you killed me. Mm-hmm. And Batman, shut up, shut up. Say, no, I win. I win. I finally made you lose control. That was the intent. Or in the multiverse one where Batman fights Dracula and ends up becoming a vampire himself. Batman, because he needed the strength of a vampire without the weaknesses of a vampire to be able to defeat Dracula, he ends up relying on a blood substitute to sustain himself. So he's always having the temptations like I need the substitute. I can't use the blood. I can't drink blood. I can never fall to that. When does he finally fall? In the confrontation with the Joker. And when Batman finally succumbs to the urges of blood, it's Joker that he's draining. And when he's draining him, Joker's laughing because I win. Yes, because Batman falls to darkness after that.
He's like, I finally did it, you know, like, yeah.
So that moment when Joker
is falling. It's so funny to think about that, like, Joker being killed by Batman being like, I finally did it, you know. I'm accomplished, like, I did it. Yeah. I made him break his one rule. Yeah. Yes,
that's why he's laughing on the way down. That's more of an Easter egg than anybody else that's not really invested in the story. Because it's there subliminally. You can catch on in the entirety of the film. That's the rule you'll have to break in order to save one of them. So in this moment, he's like, you couldn't let me go, could you? He's like, I think we're destined to do this forever. Like, I love it. Like, it's like, you've been a pen and silver. Maybe we could share one. You're just as crazy as I am. So like, yeah. Basically just telling, like, oh, there is.
Bro, those are like the biggest, you know, sequel, like, little lines that just stay in your heart, you know, like, oh, like, we were destined to do this forever. I know Nolan wanted to use Heath Ledger for a third film. Like, I think that part of that is why maybe The Dark Knight Rises isn't as great as it could have been, it's still great. You know?
I actually disagree a little bit there because thereafter, I know it was you and others, and I was getting, I guess you could say, fan mail, because I was active with the Critic Corner back then. Everybody asking me, it's like, that movie was great. What did you think? And how do you feel that Joker won't be the next movie? I said, well, the movie's fantastic. And why would I want to see the same movie again next time? You set the bar this high for that one character? You want them to repeat the same thing over there? No, because you have to understand, The Dark Knight, the last phrase, he's not a hero. Not yet. He needs to become a hero. This was a confrontation with his antithesis. Like, are you sure this is what you want to be? Because this is the chaos you created. This is because of you. You upped the ante as Gordon Warren at the end of the previous film. And now, all hell's broken loose. Everyone's going to go nuts because when the truth gets out there about Harvey Dent and everybody, it's going to really let the crazies get out there. So, you tell me. Is this the Gotham you envisioned when you wanted to save it? That you wanted to save it from itself only for it to lose its mind? Batman was not a hero, and Gotham needed to realize that he was. So in order for him to, for them to realize what he was, if Joker couldn't take him down with the mob at his back, and the Joker couldn't take him down because he got into his psyche, took out the love of his life, if that didn't work, so then that meant someone as smart as Batman, stronger than him, needed to take him down. For why I said the next film needs to be Bane to take out the Bat. Because once you take out the Bat, then Gotham will realize, holy smokes, we needed him. We need him now more than ever. And because he's a mercenary, they needed someone with the wealth to bring him in. And because Batman is Bruce Wayne is emotionally destroyed at the love of his life being removed from him, he needs someone to commend him. And the only one that can do that is Selina Kyle. And I said she could be Catwoman, she could not be Catwoman, but that's the only way you set up the third movie. Now, I wish I could fix a third movie because I had issues with the third movie. If you want to say The Dark Knight Rises, then I would have started it off not so much that he's retired. Yes, established that he's retired, but also set up that he's in prison. In other words, do the Nolan thing, the time shift and the jumping all over time frame. That would have served better for the continuity, the storytelling, than how he's basically straightforward told it. Because you have just like two or three. Okay, the first scene happens, then we're supposed to understand that 6 months have passed without a timer telling us to the start of the movie after the Bane sequence. Okay, so then we have that sequence that lasts 1-2 weeks. And then what happens then? a jump of another 6 months. I'm like, hold on, what? I'm sorry, Nolan, you're good at time. How did you screw this up? Or if Warner Bros. Really wanted to continue it really, really bad, I would have said, call this movie Dark Knight Falls. And the third act of that movie would have been Bane defeating Batman and throw him into prison and taking over the entirety of Gotham. That would have been how I would have ended that movie on that dark note. So then the fourth movie could have been The Dark Knight Rises, because he finally rises up, but after breaking out of prison, he needed to rehab himself because he needed to do that. And in rehabbing himself, in the meanwhile, we would have had this awesome no man's land kind of scenario with Gordon, the GCPD, and the factions of things trying to fight against the militia of Bane.
That would have been one maybe that could have been the way you like set up, like those early Batman movies that had all the Batman and Robin, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Had like Bane, had Poison Ivy. Like, you could have used that one film to kind of set up the No Man's Land and have that final film kind of have Batman come back and sort of save the whole city.
Yeah, so that's what I mean, that it could have set that up. It could have. But since we only have the one movie, a re-editing trick, aka Nolan style, fixes that movie. Definitely fixes it, and you don't have to reshoot any scenes. Just re-edit it, do it right, have him already be in prison, and then having a reflection of him having gone out of retirement, being defeated by Bane, and reflecting on his failures and realizing, I gotta get back there and do it right. I was cocky, and I gotta do this right. So that can fix the third movie. But in of it itself, the staying power,
or start the movie with the Bane scene, you know, with the Bane with Batman being broken scene. Like, that's a powerful first scene, you know. Like,
it's a powerful statement.
Just how you were introduced to Joker, right? With the heist, be introduced to Bane by Batman literally knocking Batman out of the game.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you had, like, I agree with that. You know, you don't want to see the same movie twice. And so, you know, Joker challenges Batman morally, mentally, and so Bane has to challenge him physically, you know, like, because we've never really seen anyone really stand up to Batman like that up until Bane. So that's a different component. Like I love to see that. So that's why I would have still loved to see Bane in the third movie. But yeah, I love what you were talking about, that edit, like starting at the prison and going on from there, like even maybe cutting like 20 minutes or 10 minutes like from the movie. Like, it didn't need to be like almost 3 hours. Like, I don't know.
True. Yeah, it didn't have to be entirely that long. There's some things that probably could have been done away with it. But yeah, starting in the prison would have been the right thing to do. Probably would have eliminated the plane sequence, though. That was really outstanding. It's just that probably would have, you could do away with it and start at the prison and then lead up to how did Bruce end up in prison and realizing that, oh snap, Bane took him out. So that's what I would have been at. But the staying power of The Dark Knight Rises versus The Dark Knight, because these two movies have been incredible in both of them. The two movies have a lot of social political commentary. The Dark Knight is credited with talking about the war on terror and using the surveillance system to take out a terrorist, because that's exactly what the Joker was. And that was just opposed to what was happening in real time, which was the war on terror and trying to take out terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and others, and using the NSA to do so. The Dark Knight Rises takes it to the next level, which was also speaking to our times, because when Jonathan Nolan was writing this out and Chris were looking at it, it's like, are we really going to go here? Because it's almost going to sound like it's going to be like the 1% versus 99% because the whole Occupy Wall Street stuff was going on. And then even beyond that, it's like, yeah, it's just that.
Well, they could tell two cities, you know?
Yeah, so it went that far, and they're like, right, let's just do it, and we'll see what happens. And that's exactly it, because the supposed savior of Gotham that was there to free them from the oppression, the corruption, was actually going to kill them all anyway. So it's like, he's lying here, but that's what's crazy. And it's like, wow, there's just that there was so much socio-political and even, let's say, geopolitical commentary in the two movies, and that's why I think The Dark Knight Rises stands out more in that sense, because of how spot on it felt, you know? a takeover, because it almost feels like there's some elements of the society where it's actually happening right now. And it's interesting to see it play out in real time, because now it's like, is it life imitating art, or was art imitating life? Now it's like, it's a chicken and the egg story. I don't know. It's just life at this point, I guess. But that's what The Dark Knight Rises staying power remains. I still wish it could be fixed, because that's why I watch it. I hate the dub that they kept for the opening sequence with the plane. I don't like the storytelling sequence. I love the story. I don't like the storytelling aspect of it, because it ruins the timeline that you're telling. Because it's like, wait a minute. In one frame to the next frame, you jump 6 months. It's like, oh, it's only like 36 more hours left. Like, what?
Yeah, too many gaps to fill. It's like, I think he's just, you know, banking on, you know, audience sort of being like, all right, cool. Like, you don't need to explain everything.
No, it almost did feel like he was rushing it at that point. It's like, let's just get this over with.
Yeah.
Because it was contractually obligated to the third movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't mean he was like
yeah,
half-assing it or whatever. No,
he doesn't want to do it. Yeah, but I'm sure he, like, yeah, I'm sure to him it has familiar beats, and then maybe he just wants to sort of repeat that or get to it as close to as he can without it being too, like, obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so how do you have them ranked? Because I have Dark Knight, Batman Begins, and Dark Knight Rises.
That's probably how I'll set them up too, because the Dark Knight's going to be number one no matter what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be tied for first place.
Dark Knight was number two to me. Yeah. Exactly. It's either Inception or Dark Knight. Like, I hate myself choosing one or the other, but I had to.
It's like, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you separated Dark Knight and Nolan films. Yeah, for real.
The only reason I'll probably choose a Nolan movie over the Batman movie was because Dark Knight is an incomplete story. There's it's bookended. There's a one and a three, and you kind of have to include it all together, and that's what makes it.
It's in the
unfair.
Middle.
That's what makes it unfair. See, it doesn't.
But
tell
I love the fact
story.
That it's the most chaotic film. You know, it's just it gives you the best story. Like, and maybe it's not complete, but it gives you the best one. You know.
Yes, it shows his directing prowess in it, and an acting powerhouse that it's hard to come by. That's like the staying power. It's like just to see it for the performances. Yeah. That's where Interstellar and The Dark Knight rank with me in terms of performance. Because I think the part that gets me why Matthew McConaughey should have been nominated for that is the part where they get stuck on the water planet and then they're back and they realize they've been gone for like 21 Earth years. So that means Cooper has to catch up on all the memories. Dude, you're crying with him as he's going through all of it. Like, dude, I feel you, man. That memory sequence with the music, the video, just the overlays of everything that you're crying with, and the editing was done so right where it wasn't pushing you one way or another. You're feeling the emotional weight of that moment. And then the part where he's like, oh, my, even in 21 years, my daughter still didn't record a thing. And then she comes on, you're like, oh, and then she says, you did, how, you're not here, and now you're crying all over again. It's like, ah, it's so good. Like that, and just watching Joker be Joker, because to say Heath Ledger's playing Joker, it's still not. I'm telling you, I still haven't processed it 12 years later that's Heath Ledger. But it's incredible to see it all play out. But if I'm really going to hit the negatives, the worst moments of Nolan's directing career can be found in the Batman movies, where you have the some of the corniest scenes are in Batman Begins, and the rivals for the worst directed scenes are also in Batman Begins with The Dark Knight Rises. The Dark Knight Rises, everybody knows, I consider that a choreograph error where some actors are falling from their cues before even a punch is thrown their way, when Batman is, they know, they just don't care. So him and Selina Kyle are fighting on the rooftop, and some guys are falling over. It's like, but no one touched them. Nolan is a guy that's detail oriented. That's where I feel like you were rushing this, weren't you? It's like, all right, whatever, it's good enough, let's just pass on. And then the other one where he saved Howard Blake, and then there's some guys that are falling out of the queues. Like, why don't you just do it all over again and get it right? It's like, let's just move on. That's how I felt he did that. So that's where I say that The Dark Knight Rises was kind of rushed, but I don't know where the mind frame went there, because the worst directed scene is in Batman Begins, where Rachel is getting out of the monorail. She realizes she's being followed, coming down the steps, and up it says coming another bad guy. And she slaps the guy. Maces the other. No.
You better run.
Yeah, that's right. You better run. That moment, I'm like, why are you turning your back to a guy that you didn't knock down? All you did was like tickle him. The guy is ready to just grab you from behind. And you're threatening only one person, but it's like you're trusting that someone's saving you. Oh, I hit him so hard, he's scared of me now. I'm a tough girl. It's like, no, you're a really tiny girl. And you could have been easily being overwhelmed immediately. That's the worst direct scene he's done. And I know what it sets up, but I'm like, dude, I'm sorry, Nolan. That was terrible. But also, is because, Nolan, how did you not know you used the same you used two actors for two different scenes, and they're not supposed to know the previous scene happened. The police officer on the rooftop when they're chasing the tumbler, turn off your engine, step away from the car. And then when Batman still takes off, then later on we see that officer, at least tell me what it looks like. Then the Batmobile goes by like, oh, never mind. Weren't you just there on the rooftop?
And it's like, never mind, yeah.
Or what are the thugs for Crane?
Yeah, Batman Begins is his campiest film, but his funniest film, bro. The Swear to Me, the Rachel, when he's like driving into the Batcave, like it's like unintentionally campy, but it's still great and hilarious. And yeah, Scarecrow also hilarious. I think in Dark Knight Rises, just his little cameo as like the judge, it's probably like my favorite part of him.
Well, yeah. There's a message that I just came through, so I'm trying to respond to it. So that's why the strengths and the weaknesses of Nolan can be found in the Dark Knight trilogy altogether. But I'm really excited what he's ultimately going to do with Tenet. We do have to wrap it up now, but Tenet, the bar is set, man. So all I know is I'm expected to have my mind blown. And if the first trailer is any indicator, it's just not only will it be blown up, it'll be decimated thereafter. I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to decimate it. It's like, dude, what are you setting up here, man? Because that vehicle rolling over and unrolling is just so trippy. It's just so good. That could be our
yeah, it might be visually like sequence. Might be the best movie this year. Yeah,
it's already the best movie of this year, man. I can't see anything on the pipeline that can rival it. Anything before or since, really, this year?
True. Nothing, man.
And anyway, any year in the world is the best, it's the best movie of the year. So there you go. Yeah. Hey, man. Hey, well, it was good.
It's always going to be in contention for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely good to connect on these kind of things and to look forward to something, especially in all this chaos. We have a thing to look forward to, at least. So crossing fingers that it'll
live up
to the hype. And that we can actually go watch it. That's the big deal, right? To actually go watch it. So,
We'll see. We'll see what's up. Hopefully, all
right.
I think we'll be good. I'm hoping we'll go out to see it. Like they really should. It'll be awesome. It'll be great to finally go to the movies again. Actually, like I miss it. You know, low key. Like the last movie I saw in theaters was the Harley Quinn movie. Which actually was not that bad. I thought it was kind of cool. Which actually kind of gave me sort of like confidence in WB kind of just making their own sort of like independent, like not independent, but sort of like self-isolated movies. And so that way they can get as crazy as they want to and not have to worry about before or after that movie. They just focus on making the best movie. But yeah, I'm definitely excited to go back to the theaters.
Yeah. And what better way than a Nolan movie that we're long overdue for, man. Whew, long overdue. Oh, it's been like Dunkirk, man. Dude, freaking A, hurry up. Especially in the year that I thought was going to be a banner year for the Nolans because I didn't care for Westworld Season 3. So this is looking for redemption. So, all right, Chris, It's on. Sorry, not yeah. Chris. Christopher. I don't like disrespect him. I don't like calling him Chris. Christopher Nolan. He's got my respect, my utmost respect. So keep it going. All right, man. So that's what we'll leave it on Mr. this Nolan. This episode yeah. for the Creative Corner. So all things Nolan, and here's the Tenet, and let's reconnect afterwards to see what our reactions will be after we've seen it.
Definitely. Yeah, sounds like fun, bro. Thanks for having me on. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, brother. Talk to you in the next one. And that does it for this episode of the Critic Corner. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.